tuned up and rolling. It's the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
And in addition to the Titan Missile Museum, our staycation winners that are traveling to Tubac this weekend have no shortages of other options that they can do. You have the Tucson La Fiesta de los Vaqueros Rodeo going on. It's a whole week event, starts this weekend. The parade's not till next Thursday, but there's still plenty of events going on. You could get trampled by a camel if they escape from Camels and Friends again. Tuesday, the Pima Sheriff Office had to be dispatched to two rogue camels that had escaped, got them rounded back up and turned back in. There was an ocelot sighting this week in the southern Arizona mountains.
Wow.
Get your night vision on and go sit in the Dragoon Mountains and wait to see an ocelot travel by. You could, although it's only about a 45-minute as the crow flies from Tubac to Sierra Vista, it's about a two-hour drive any which way you cut it. But you could get over to the Fort Huachuca where they have the Buffalo Soldier Museum is exhibiting right now. While you're next to Sierra Vista, you could meander up to Tombstone's Vigilante Days that are happening this weekend. A little celebration of the Wild West on the streets of Tombstone.
It's a great time of year to get out and about. The weather is amazing.
And that's just this weekend.
This weekend.
Just in southern Arizona.
You know, our staycation winners down there, we're talking southern Arizona, and they're staying at the Tubac Golf Resort and Spa. Romy, do you know the history of that property? It goes back to 1789 when the King of Spain granted Don Otero, who was 28 years old at the time, a land grant, and that's the very spot the Tubac is on, so that was in the family for a couple hundred years until 1959. And when you go and stay there, they've tried to keep the flavor of the, you know, the stone and the wood and the brick on the ground, and the actual home is still there. You can tour if you're going to stay there, but it's also a very elegant place, and you can golf, and you know what? If you're a golfer, their golf pro goes by Fruit Salad. that's her nickname, but her name is Christy Fowler, and she was the 2017 National Golf Pro of the Year. So it's quite an experience where you can go down and experience history and then also have a great golf game or hang out at the spa.
And Jay, you've said you've stayed down there a few times.
We've had occasion to be there for a couple of meetings through the Nursery Association. It's very nice, whether you golf or not. Very southwestern charm architecture and the casita. They're like little casitas instead of hotel. You know, it's, mm-hmm. So they've kept the flavor of the Southwest very nicely, and the grounds are really cool.
And the view of the Santa Ritas, right?
You can see the Santa Ritas, on one side, and the Tumacacris on the other side, and it's a neat spot. And as you mentioned, there's all kinds. You can go to you can always go to Nogales and walk across the border and do a little shopping. There's lots of stuff. Tumacacri, which is the old mission, is just, I think, the next exit down. So there's a lot of stuff to see.
And Green Valley, you've got the pecan. I've driven through the pecan orchards. Is it a pecan orchard?
Yeah.
Pecan field?
Grove.
Orchard. Pecan mm-hmm. Grove.
And what's that
I've
highway?
Never gone into the Green Valley pecans gift shop.
Oh,
I hear that's
some,
worth.
there's some cool stuff in there.
That's what we use for our pecans every year when we make our gifting of the Cajun pecans. Mm. But what did you say that highway is?
The old Nogales Highway.
Okay.
Which is the old highway, and it goes right down through the, in between certain fields of the grove. So, this time of year it wouldn't be as because the trees wouldn't have any leaves on them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the spring. In the fall, it's really neat because you drop down in there and white picket fence and pecan trees on both sides. It's kind of like you lose track of where you are. It looks like somewhere else.
You know, it's there. This time of year is the festival season, and their last big festival is March 29th and 30th in Tubac. It's the Spring Art Walk, so that'd be a good time to go down. And
what do they say? Where art and history meet?
Boy, do they! Wow.
Tubac.
Yeah. And there's some neat stuff in the lobby or the restaurant in there, some artifacts and old historical memorabilia, chaps and spurs and stuff hanging on the wall and brands and different things. Neat spot.
Well, it's been a lot of fun having the staycation and the expansion of this fourth hour of the program to talk about all things Arizona, which led us to a conversation with Heidi Osselier, who wrote Arizona's Deadliest Gunfight, a story that dates back to, it's after the shootout at the OK Corral. This was in 1918, and it just so happens that Jay Harper, you got a little tie to this event.
What, you called me?
You weren't a trigger man, but...
No, I was a little before my time.
Well, when we discussed this, what, 2 weeks ago?
Two or three.
Yeah, and so you can catch the podcast.
Or eight, I don't remember.
Yeah, you can tie. Oh, Gary's telling us it's two. And then, if you're interested in the story, you can hear Heidi talk about the whole event. And then Jay has some things to.
Romy had reached out when you were going to have Heidi on, and we couldn't quite make it work to be there that day. But he said, you have some connections to that. And I said, well, yeah, a little bit. But so my great grandfather, A.G. Walker, was deputy in Klondike at the time. His brother-in-law is Kane Wooten, who is one of the guys on the posse that was killed in the gunfight. So
did Kane marry Walker's sister?
Other way around.
Okay.
A.G. Walker married a Wooten.
A Wooten sister.
A sister of Kane, yes.
And back up for anybody that hasn't or missed that broadcast or not familiar with the story. This happens, it's a mining cabin up in the woods, and there's four men in it, a father, two sons, and their hired hand.
Correct.
And this posse is going up there after them to serve warrants for draft evasion for World War I.
And where is it?
Where is the cabin?
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the Galero Mountains, which is, you know, if you were in Safford, you would kind of go north a little bit from Safford. It's pretty remote even today. The Galeros there's no highways that go through the Galeros. So you've got kind of Aravaipa Canyon on one side and then the highway to Safford on the other side. So I guess it's south of Safford. But it's really remote even today. So that you can today hike in, or there's a hiking trail, or ride horses into Power's Cabin or Power Gardens and see it. I have not ever been there. I'd love to go. But so it was pretty remote. You could, in that day, it's kind of a weird combination of time because there was cars, motorized vehicles that you could get to certain places. And then there's, you know, they had to, I think you could get to Safford with motorized car. Then they had to take a wagon or horseback into the mountains, and there's no road into, even today, there's no road into the cabin. So it was pretty remote.
And Walker, your grand, was that your grandfather?
Great-grandfather.
They asked him to go along originally.
Well, the opportunity was there, and he just said it's not worth it. You know, it's too dangerous.
Smart guy.
So if you go back in history, and I think it mentions this either in the book or the documentary. Maybe it was the documentary. There was a number of these around the country, draft evaders, draft dodgers that were being pursued, and there was a number of shootouts and gunfights and guys killed over it. And you know, I think he just had the foresight enough to say, they'll have to come to town. They got to come to town to get supplies eventually. So he was pretty wise. And, you know, he went on to be the warden at the Arizona State Penitentiary, and then the first head of the highway department when they created the highway department.
The way I understood it too was they were supposed to wait. They weren't supposed to go charging up the mountain. The order was, you know, when they came to town.
There's a lot of, you know, and they probably had other opportunities. I think there was just some, you know, it was kind of one of those things that these guys were kind of one of those families that weren't understood. They were seclusive. They didn't mingle with the rest of society. So that makes you a little suspicious or different, and not much different than today in a lot of respects. That, you know, so they were probably not given the benefit of the doubt, and they were breaking the law. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, a lot of books and a lot of things always kind of tend to slide to their favor to some degree, and certainly the measures taken were probably excessive. And getting tried for first-degree murder is what I don't understand. I mean, it was certainly nothing they did was premeditated.
They were
attacked. I mean, not attacked, but I mean, they were surrounded in a cabin and a shootout ensued, no matter who started it. But I don't think they premeditated having the guys come to their cabin.
And didn't Heidi say they didn't even tell them who they were? I mean, they just kind of show up and tell them to come outside and didn't announce who they were.
I think the statement was just, you know, I think Mr. Power opened the door to probably go out and use the restroom or really.
And they had heard commotion.
They heard a little bit of
horse.
The horse made
the
a noise. And
so mountain lion country, bear country,
yeah.
Probably going to, you know,
protect your livestock and, you know, raise your hands and drop your weapon and shot started. And, you know, we don't know. So, you know, there's a comment made.
One thing she said, I said, how did the results end up like this? You've got four guys in a cabin smaller than most bedrooms today, and they live, and the four guys outside, three of them die. How are you outside, and you're the one that gets killed, and the guys that are like shooting fish in a barrel survive? And she said, well, they were standing out in the open, and that tells me that they probably weren't there to ambush them. If they're all just standing out in front
Correct.
Of the door, yeah. they weren't there with harsh and with intent to kill. And it was, he came out with his gun to see what was going on. 7:30 in the morning in a canyon.
Middle of winter, and so it's dark.
You've been up all night traveling. Your nerves are shot. It could have been just an accidental misfire, the first shot, and then everything just went downhill from there.
Well, and you're taking the word of who shot first from whoever, too. So, you know, I mean, there's a statement made in the documentary about one of the Powers shooting Kane Wooten. He stuck his gun shot through the cabin wall as he was walking by and shot him in the belly. Well, the autopsy said he was shot in the back.
And if he shot through the wall, how would you know if he was come? Which
so, you know, I mean, it's an unfortunate, you know, set of circumstances, you know, that probably was overplayed by a number of people. And
now, how many times over the years around family gatherings did this story ever come up, or was it just not even mentioned?
Not hardly at all. You know, the Wootens are, you know, I mean, so it's my great grandfather's brother-in-law. So, I mean, maybe at a family reunion every few years, it got talked about. I can just remember my grandmother, so A.G. Walker's daughters, the niece of Kane Wooten, talking about when she was a little girl, and of course they lived out on a ranch, and you know sometimes it was mentioned if these, you know, people as they're riding their horses to their places would stop at a ranch and water their stock or whatever, that if they came by to not, you know, don't socialize with them. Again, just kind of pointing out that they were just perceived as just kind of a little different, kind of a little standoffish. But that's all I really remember her ever talking about it.